Strange Quark. Point 1-6. Family 3. Particle, tau. Mass, 1.9. Tau neutrino. Less than 0.033. Top quark, 189. Bottom quark, 5.2. This will no doubt leave you with an even stronger sense of Robbie's bewilderment at the discovery of the muon. The arrangement into families at least gives some semblance of order, but innumerable whys leap to the fore. Why are there so many fundamental particles, especially when it seems that the great majority of things in the world around us need only electrons, up quarks, and down quarks? Why are there three families? Why not one family, or four families, or any other number? Why do the particles have a seemingly random spread of masses? Why, for instance, does the tau weigh about 3,520 times as much as an electron? Why does the top quark weigh about 40,200 times as much as an up quark? These are such strange, seemingly random numbers. Did they occur by chance, by some divine choice? Or is there a comprehensible scientific explanation for these fundamental features of our universe? The forces, or where's the photon? Things only become more complicated when we consider the forces of nature. The world around us is replete with means of exerting influence. Balls can be hit with bats. Bungee enthusiasts can throw themselves earthward from high platforms. Magnets can keep superfast trains suspended just above metallic tracks. Geiger counters can tick in response to radioactive material. Nuclear bombs can explode. We can influence objects by vigorously pushing, pulling, or shaking them, by hurling or firing other objects into them, by stretching, twisting, or crushing them, or by freezing, heating, or burning them. During the past 100 years, physicists have accumulated mounting evidence that all of these interactions between various objects and materials, as well as any of the millions upon millions of others encountered daily, can be reduced to combinations of four fundamental forces. One of these is the gravitational force. The other three are the electromagnetic force, the weak force, and the strong force. Gravity is the most familiar of the forces, being responsible for keeping us in orbit around the sun, as well as for keeping our feet firmly planted on the Earth. The mass of an object measures how much gravitational force it can exert as well as feel. The electromagnetic force is the next most familiar of the four. It is the force driving all of the conveniences of modern life: lights, computers, TVs, telephones, and underlies the awesome might of lightning storms and the gentle touch of a human hand. Microscopically, the electric charge of a particle plays the same role for the electromagnetic force as mass does for gravity. It determines how strongly the particle can exert as well as respond electromagnetically. The strong and the weak forces are less familiar because their strength rapidly diminishes over all but subatomic distance scales. They are the nuclear forces. This is why these two forces were discovered only much more recently. The strong force is responsible for keeping quarks glued together inside of protons and neutrons, and keeping protons and neutrons tightly crammed together inside atomic nuclei. The weak force is best known as the force responsible for the radioactive decay of substances such as uranium and cobalt. During the past century, physicists have found two features common to all these forces. First, as we will discuss in Chapter 5, at a microscopic level, all the forces have an associated particle that you can think of as being the smallest packet or bundle of the force. If you fire a laser beam, an electromagnetic ray gun, you are firing a stream of photons, the smallest bundles of the electromagnetic force. Similarly, the smallest constituents of weak and strong force fields are particles called weak-gauge bosons and gluons. The name gluon is particularly descriptive. You can think of gluons as the microscopic ingredient in the strong glue holding atomic nuclei together. By 1984, experimenters had definitively established the existence and the detailed properties of these three kinds of force particles. Force strong, particle gluon, mass zero. Force electromagnetic, particle photon, mass zero. Force weak, particle weak gauge bosons, mass 86 or 97. Force gravity, particle graviton, mass zero. Physicists believe that the gravitational force also has an associated particle, the graviton, but its existence has yet to be confirmed experimentally. The second common feature of the forces is that just as mass determines how gravity affects a particle, and electric charge determines how the electromagnetic force affects it, particles are endowed with certain amounts of strong charge and weak charge that determine how they are affected by the strong and weak forces. But as with particle masses, beyond the fact that experimental physicists have carefully measured these properties, no one has any explanation of why our universe is composed of these particular particles, with these particular masses and force charges. Notwithstanding their common features, an examination of the fundamental forces themselves serves only to compound the questions. Why, for instance, are there four fundamental forces? Why not five or three or perhaps only one? Why do the forces have such different properties? Why are the strong and weak forces confined to operate on microscopic scales, while gravity and the electromagnetic force have an unlimited range of influence? And why is there such an enormous spread in the intrinsic strength of these forces? To appreciate this last question, imagine holding an electron in your left hand and another electron in your right hand, and bringing these two identical electrically charged particles close together. Their mutual gravitational attraction will favor their getting closer, while their electromagnetic repulsion will try to drive them apart. Which is stronger? There is no contest. The electromagnetic repulsion is about 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, right bicep represents the strength of the gravitational force, then your left bicep would have to extend beyond the edge of the known universe to represent the strength of the electromagnetic force. The only reason the electromagnetic force does not completely overwhelm gravity in the world around us is that most things are composed of an equal amount of positive and negative electric charges whose forces cancel each other out. On the other hand, since gravity is always attractive, there are no analogous cancellations. More stuff means greater gravitational force. But fundamentally speaking, gravity is an extremely feeble force. This fact accounts for the difficulty in experimentally confirming the existence of the graviton. Searching for the smallest bundle of the feeblest force is quite a challenge. Experiments have also shown that the strong force is about 100 times as strong as the electromagnetic force and about 100,000 times as strong as the weak force. But where's the rationale, the raison d'etre, for our universe having these features? This is not a question born of idle philosophizing about why certain details happen to be one way instead of another. The universe would be a vastly different place if the properties of the matter and force particles were even moderately changed. For example, the existence of the stable nuclei forming the 100 or so elements of the periodic table hinges delicately on the ratio between the strengths of the strong and the electromagnetic forces. The protons crammed together in atomic nuclei all repel one another electromagnetically. The strong force acting among their constituent quarks, thankfully, overcomes this repulsion and tethers the protons tightly together. But a rather small change in the relative strengths of these two forces would easily disrupt the balance between them and would cause most atomic nuclei to disintegrate. Furthermore, were the mass of the electron a few times greater than it is, electrons and protons would tend to combine to form neutrons, gobbling up the nuclei of hydrogen, the simplest element in the cosmos, with a nucleus containing a single proton, and again disrupting the production of more complex elements. Stars rely upon fusion between stable nuclei and would not form with such alterations to fundamental physics. The strength of the gravitational force also plays a formative role. The crushing density of matter in a star's central core powers its nuclear furnace and underlies the resulting blaze of starlight. If the strength of the gravitational force were increased, the stellar clump would bind more strongly, causing a significant increase in the rate of nuclear reactions. But just as a brilliant flare exhausts its fuel much faster than a slow-burning candle, an increase in the nuclear reaction rate would cause stars like the Sun to burn out far more quickly, having a devastating effect on the formation of life as we know it. On the other hand, were the strength of the gravitational force significantly decreased, matter would not clump together at all, thereby preventing the formation of stars and galaxies. We could go on, but the idea is clear. The universe is the way it is because the matter and the force particles have the properties they do. But is there a scientific explanation for why they have these properties? String theory, the basic idea. String theory offers a powerful conceptual paradigm in which, for the first time, a framework for answering these questions has emerged. Let's first get the basic idea. Particles are the letters of all matter. Just like their linguistic counterparts, they appear to have no further internal substructure. String theory proclaims otherwise. According to string theory, if we could examine these particles with even greater precision, a precision many orders of magnitude beyond our present technological capacity, we would find that each is not point-like, but instead consists of a tiny one-dimensional loop. Like an infinitely thin rubber band, each particle contains a vibrating, oscillating, dancing filament that physicists, lacking Gell-Mann's literary flair, have named a string. We can picture this essential idea of string theory by starting with an ordinary piece of matter, an apple, and repeatedly magnifying its structure to reveal its ingredients on ever smaller scales. String theory adds the new microscopic layer of a vibrating loop to the previously known progression from atoms through protons, neutrons, electrons, and quarks. Although it is by no means obvious, we will see in Chapter 6 that this simple replacement of point particle material constituents with strings resolves the incompatibility between quantum mechanics and general relativity. String theory thereby unravels the central Gordian knot of contemporary theoretical physics. This is a tremendous achievement, but it is only part of the reason string theory has generated such excitement. String theory as the unified theory of everything. In Einstein's day, the strong and the weak forces had not yet been discovered, but he found the existence of even two distinct forces, gravity and electromagnetism, deeply troubling. Einstein did not accept that nature is founded on such an extravagant design. This launched his 30-year voyage in search of the so-called unified field theory that he hoped would show that these two forces are really manifestations of one grand underlying principle. This quixotic quest isolated Einstein from the mainstream of physics, which, understandably, was far more excited about delving into the newly emerging framework of quantum mechanics. He wrote to a friend in the early 1940s, "I have become a lonely old chap who is mainly known because he doesn't wear socks and who is exhibited as a curiosity on special occasions." Einstein was simply ahead of his time. More than half a century later, his dream of a unified theory has become the holy grail of modern physics. And a sizable part of the physics and mathematics community is becoming increasingly convinced that string theory may provide the answer. From one principle, that everything at its most microscopic level consists of combinations of vibrating strands, string theory provides a single explanatory framework capable of encompassing all forces and all matter. String theory proclaims, for instance, that observed particle properties are a reflection of the various ways in which a string can vibrate. just as the strings on a violin or on a piano have resonant frequencies at which they prefer to vibrate, patterns that our ear senses various musical notes and their higher harmonics, the same holds true for the loops of string theory. But we will see that, rather than producing musical notes, each of the preferred patterns of vibration of a string in string theory appears as a particle whose mass and force charges are determined by the string's oscillatory pattern. The electron is a string vibrating one way, the up quark is a string vibrating another way, and so on. Far from being a collection of chaotic experimental facts, particle properties in string theory are the manifestation of one and the same physical feature. The resonant patterns of vibration, the music, so to speak, of fundamental loops of string. The same idea applies to the forces of nature as well. We will see that force particles are also associated with particular patterns of string vibration, and hence everything, all matter and all forces, is unified under the same rubric of microscopic string oscillations, the notes that strings can play. For the first time in the history of physics, we therefore have a framework with the capacity to explain every fundamental feature upon which the universe is constructed. For this reason, string theory is sometimes described as possibly being the theory of everything, TOE, or the ultimate or final theory. These grandiose descriptive terms are meant to signify the deepest possible theory of physics, a theory that underlies all others, one that does not require or even allow for a deeper explanatory base. In practice, many string theorists take a more down-to-earth approach and think of a TOE in the more limited sense of a theory that can explain the properties of the fundamental particles and the properties of the forces by which they interact and influence one another. A staunch reductionist would claim that this is no limitation at all, and that in principle absolutely everything, from the Big Bang to daydreams, can be described in terms of underlying microscopic physical processes involving the fundamental constituents of matter. If you understand everything about the ingredients, the reductionist argues, you understand everything. The reductionist philosophy easily ignites heated debate. Many find it fatuous and downright repugnant to claim that the wonders of life and the universe are mere reflections of microscopic particles engaged in a pointless dance fully choreographed by the laws of physics. Is it really the case that feelings of joy, sorrow, or boredom are nothing but chemical reactions in the brain? Reactions between molecules and atoms that, even more microscopically, are reactions between some particles which are really just vibrating strings? In response to this line of criticism, Nobel laureate Steven Weinberg cautions in Dreams of a Final Theory. At the other end of the spectrum are the opponents of reductionism who are appalled by what they feel to be the bleakness of modern science. To whatever extent they and their world can be reduced to a matter of particles or fields and their interactions, they feel diminished by that knowledge. I would not try to answer these critics with a pep talk about the beauties of modern science. The reductionist worldview is chilling and impersonal. It has to be accepted as it is, not because we like it, but because that is the way the world works. Some agree with this stark view, some don't. Others have tried to argue that developments such as chaos theory tell us that new kinds of laws come into play when the level of complexity of a system increases. Understanding the behavior of an electron or a quark is one thing. Using this knowledge to understand the behavior of a tornado is quite another. On this point, most agree. But opinions diverge on whether the diverse and often unexpected phenomena that can occur in systems more complex than individual particles truly represent new physical principles at work, or whether the principles involved are derivative, relying, albeit in a terribly complicated way, on the physical principles governing the enormously large number of elementary constituents. My own feeling is that they do not represent new and independent laws of physics. Although it would be hard to explain the properties of a tornado in terms of the physics of electrons and quarks, I see this as a matter of calculational impasse, not an indicator of the need for new physical laws. But again, there are some who disagree with this view. What is largely beyond question, and is of primary importance to the journey described in this book, is that even if one accepts the debatable reasoning of the staunch reductionist, principle is one thing and practice quite another. Almost everyone agrees that finding the TOE would in no way mean that psychology, biology, geology, chemistry, or even physics had been solved or in some sense subsumed. The universe is such a wonderfully rich and complex place that the discovery of the final theory, in the sense we are describing here, would not spell the end of science. Quite the contrary, the discovery of the TOE, the ultimate explanation of the universe at its most microscopic level, a theory that does not rely on any deeper explanation, would provide the firmest foundation on which to build our understanding of the world. Its discovery would mark a beginning, not an end. The ultimate theory would provide an unshakable pillar of coherence forever assuring us that the universe is a comprehensible place. The state of string theory. The central concern of this book is to explain the workings of the universe according to string theory, with a primary emphasis on the implications that these results have for our understanding of space and time. Unlike many other exposés of scientific developments, the one given here does not address itself to a theory that has been completely worked out, confirmed by vigorous experimental tests, and fully accepted by the scientific community. The reason for this, as we will discuss in subsequent chapters, is that string theory is such a deep and sophisticated theoretical structure that even with the impressive progress that has been made over the last two decades, we still have far to go before we can claim to have achieved full mastery. And so string theory should be viewed as a work in progress, whose partial completion has already revealed astonishing insights into the nature of space, time, and matter. The harmonious union of general relativity and quantum mechanics is a major success. Furthermore, unlike any previous theory, string theory has the capacity to answer primordial questions having to do with nature's most fundamental constituents and forces. Of equal importance, although somewhat harder to convey, is the remarkable elegance of both the answers and the framework for answers that string theory proposes. For instance, in string theory, many aspects of nature that might appear to be arbitrary technical details, such as the number of distinct fundamental particle ingredients and their respective properties, are found to arise from essential and tangible aspects of the geometry of the universe. If string theory is right, the microscopic fabric of our universe is a richly intertwined multidimensional labyrinth within which the strings of the universe endlessly twist and vibrate, rhythmically beating out the laws of the cosmos. Far from being accidental details, the properties of nature's basic building blocks are deeply entwined with the fabric of space and time. In the final analysis, though, nothing is a substitute for definitive, testable predictions that can determine whether string theory has truly lifted the veil of mystery hiding the deepest truths of our universe. It may be some time before our level of comprehension has reached sufficient depth to achieve this aim, although, as we will discuss in Chapter 9, experimental tests could provide strong circumstantial support for string theory within the next 10 years or so. Moreover, in Chapter 13, we will see that string theory has recently solved a central puzzle concerning black holes, associated with the so-called Bekenstein-Hawking entropy that has stubbornly resisted resolution by more conventional means for more than 25 years. This success has convinced many that string theory is in the process of giving us our deepest understanding of how the universe works. Edward Witten, one of the pioneers and leading experts in string theory, summarizes the situation by saying that string theory is a part of 21st century physics that fell by chance into the 20th century, an assessment first articulated by the celebrated Italian physicist Daniele Amati. In a sense, then, it is as if our forebears in the late 19th century had been presented with a modern-day supercomputer without the operating instructions. Through inventive trial and error, hints of the supercomputer's power would have become evident, but it would have taken vigorous and prolonged effort to gain true mastery. The hints of the computer's potential, like our glimpses of string theory's explanatory power, would have provided extremely strong motivation for obtaining complete facility. A similar motivation today energizes a generation of theoretical physicists to pursue a full and precise analytic understanding of string theory. Witten's remark, and those of other experts in the field, indicate that it could be decades or even centuries before string theory is fully developed and understood. This may well be true. In fact, the mathematics of string theory is so complicated that, to date, no one even knows the exact equations of the theory. Instead, physicists know only approximations to these equations, and even the approximate equations are so complicated that they as yet have been only partially solved. Nevertheless, an inspiring set of breakthroughs in the latter half of the 1990s, breakthroughs that have answered theoretical questions of hitherto unimaginable difficulty, may well indicate that complete quantitative understanding of string theory is much closer than initially thought. Physicists worldwide are developing powerful new techniques to transcend the numerous approximate methods so far used, collectively piecing together disparate elements of the string theory puzzle at an exhilarating rate. Surprisingly, these developments are providing new vantage points for reinterpreting some of the basic aspects of the theory that have been in place for some time. For instance, a natural question that may have occurred to you is, why strings? Why not little frisbee discs, or microscopic blob-like nuggets, or a combination of all these possibilities? As we shall see in Chapter 12, the most recent insights show that these other kinds of ingredients do have an important role in string theory, and have revealed that string theory is actually part of an even grander synthesis currently and mysteriously named M-theory. These latest developments will be the subject of the final chapters of this book. Progress in science proceeds in fits and starts. Some periods are filled with great breakthroughs. At other times, researchers experience dry spells. Scientists put forward results, both theoretical and experimental. The results are debated by the community. Sometimes they are discarded, sometimes they are modified, and sometimes they provide inspirational jumping-off points for new and more accurate ways of understanding the physical universe. In other words, science proceeds along a zigzag path toward what we hope will be ultimate truth, a path that began with humanity's earliest attempts to fathom the cosmos and whose end we cannot predict. Whether string theory is an incidental rest stop along this path, a landmark turning point, or in fact the final destination, we do not know. But the last two decades of research by hundreds of dedicated physicists and mathematicians from numerous countries have given us well-founded hope that we are on the right and possibly final track. It is a telling testament of the rich and far-reaching nature of string theory that even our present level of understanding has allowed us to gain striking new insights into the workings of the universe. A central thread in what follows will be those developments that carry forward the revolution in our understanding of space and time initiated by Einstein's special and general theories of relativity. We will see that if string theory is correct, the fabric of our universe has properties that would likely have dazzled even Einstein. Part 2. The Dilemma of Space, Time, and the Quanta. Chapter 2. Space, Time, and the Eye of the Beholder. In June 1905, 26-year-old Albert Einstein submitted a technical article to the German Annals of Physics, in which he came to grips with a paradox about light that had first troubled him as a teenager some 10 years earlier. Upon turning the final page of Einstein's manuscript, the editor of the journal, Max Planck, realized that the accepted scientific order had been overthrown. Without hoopla or fanfare, a patent clerk from Bern, Switzerland, had completely overturned the traditional notions of space and time and replaced them with a new conception whose properties fly in the face of everything we are familiar with from common experience. The paradox that had troubled Einstein for a decade was this. In the mid-1800s, after a close study of the experimental work of the English physicist Michael Faraday, the Scottish physicist James Clerk Maxwell succeeded in uniting electricity and magnetism in the framework of the electromagnetic field. If you've ever been on a mountaintop just before a severe thunderstorm, or stood close to a Van de Graaff generator, you have a visceral sense of what an electromagnetic field is, because you felt it. In case you haven't, it is somewhat like a tide of electric and magnetic lines of force that permeate a region of space through which they pass. When you sprinkle iron filings near a magnet, for example, the orderly pattern they form traces out some of the invisible lines of magnetic force. When you take off a wool sweater on an especially dry day and hear a crackling sound and perhaps feel a momentary shock or two, you are witnessing evidence of electric lines of force generated by electric charges swept up by the fibers in your sweater. Beyond uniting these and all other electric and magnetic phenomena in one mathematical framework, Maxwell's theory showed, quite unexpectedly, that electromagnetic disturbances travel at a fixed and never-changing speed, a speed that turns out to equal that of light. From this, Maxwell realized that visible light itself is nothing but a particular kind of electromagnetic wave, one that is now understood to interact with chemicals in the retina, giving rise to the sensation of sight. Moreover, and this is crucial, Maxwell's theory also showed that all electromagnetic waves, visible light among them, are the epitome of the peripatetic traveler. They never stop. They never slow down. Light always travels at light speed. All is well and good until we ask, as the 16-year-old Einstein did, what happens if we chase after a beam of light at light speed? Intuitive reasoning, rooted in Newton's laws of motion, tells us that we will catch up with the light waves, and so they will appear stationary. Light will stand still. But according to Maxwell's theory and all reliable observations, there is simply no such thing as stationary light. No one has ever held a stationary clump of light in the palm of his or her hand. Hence the problem. Luckily, Einstein was unaware that many of the world's leading physicists were struggling with this question and were heading down many a spurious path, and pondered the paradox of Maxwell and Newton largely in the pristine privacy of his own thoughts. In this chapter, we discuss how Einstein resolved the conflict through his special theory of relativity, and in so doing, forever changed our conceptions of space and time. It is perhaps surprising that the essential concern of special relativity is to understand precisely how the world appears to individuals, often called observers, who are moving relative to one another. At first, this might seem to be an intellectual exercise of minimal importance. Quite the contrary. In the hands of Einstein, with his imaginings of observers chasing after light beams, there are profound implications to grasping fully how even the most mundane situations appear to individuals in relative motion. Intuition and its flaws. Common experience highlights certain ways in which observations by such individuals differ. Trees alongside a highway, for example, appear to be moving from the viewpoint of a driver, but appear stationary to a hitchhiker sitting on a guardrail. Similarly, the dashboard of the automobile does not appear to be moving from the viewpoint of the driver, one hopes. But like the rest of the car, it does appear to be moving from the viewpoint of the hitchhiker. These are such basic and intuitive properties of how the world works that we hardly take note of them. Special relativity, however, proclaims that the differences in observations between two such individuals are more subtle and profound. It makes the strange claim that observers in relative motion will have different perceptions of distance and of time. This means, as we shall see, that identical wristwatches worn by two individuals in relative motion will tick at different rates and hence will not agree on the amount of time that elapses between chosen events. Special relativity demonstrates that this statement does not slander the accuracy of the wristwatches involved. Rather, it is a true statement about time itself.